When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Across the Sky is proudly sponsored by Weather Call Services. Don't be caught off guard in severe weather. Choose Weather Call. Hello, once again, everybody. I'm meteorologist Sean Sublett, and welcome to Across the Sky, our national Lee Enterprises weather podcast. Lee Enterprises has digital and print news operations in more than 70 locations across the country, including my home base here in Richmond, Virginia. I'm joined by Joe Martucci at the New Jersey Shore this week. Matt Holliner and Kirsten Lang are both out of the office this week. Joe, we wanted to talk to a colleague of ours in South Carolina, a little inside baseball this week, because the nature of forecasting and weather communications continues to change and change in a big way. That's kind of why you're here in the first place, right, man?
You took the words out of my mouth, Sean, here. I was going to say, if this was 20 years ago, I don't think you or Kirsten or Matt or I would have the job that we have today, which is pretty much kind of similar to what you see in broadcast television, except we live on the internet, and we're not doing all of those hits. You know, you think about television, right? You got 3 hours in a row. You might be doing hits, you know, every 10 minutes or whatever it is. You know, here, our mindset is we're going to take all that time, you know, from being live, roll it up into one or two videos and spend our time doing things like this, talking on the podcast, forecasting for other areas. We, you know, while we do have our home base, we also forecast other spots, being real active on social. I mean, Sean, yesterday I got to go talk to four-year-olds at 10 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, I'm sure you know, you worked in television for a long time. Those kind of things are a little tough when you have newscasts and everything to be a part of. And we love our friends in the broadcast field. They do amazing work. We've all done it. But we are also riding this digital wave that we're happy to be a part of also.
Yeah, the nature of media continues to change. Print, radio, classic broadcasts, cable, satellite, internet, streaming video, Twitch.
Yeah.
Let's see, what's the other one?
Discord.
Discord, right.
I'm on Reddit.
Reddit is still wildly popular. So there are lots of places to get weather information, short-term, long-term, and that's what we're able to do. And a colleague of ours in South Carolina has kind of taken this role as well. So we're going to spend a little time with her for the podcast this week. We're going to talk with Emily Gracie. She's at the National Weather Desk from her office in Charleston, South Carolina. We'll talk about what she's doing there, as well as her podcast called Off the Radar. So with that, we're going to have our conversation right now with Emily Gracie.
All right. Well, today's very exciting podcast episode, because not only is it an episode of Off the Radar, it's an episode of Across the Sky. And if you haven't heard of that, you should check it out on all of the platforms where you can find podcasts. Another great weather podcast. I'm always watching these guys, and I finally talk to you guys into a collaborative episode as well. So we have Sean Sublett and Joe Martucci, two friends of mine as well. So I'm thrilled to just get to hang out with you guys for a few minutes and chat about weather and digital meteorology. Sean, can you quickly give us a little background on you? Because you're a former broadcast man as well, but also kind of dabbled in the climate world.
Right. So yes, my name is Sean Sublett. I worked 20 years on the air as a broadcast meteorologist in the Roanoke-Lynchburg, Virginia television market between the NBC and the ABC affiliates. I got out of that line of work in 2015, then worked in climate science communications for about 6 years at Climate Central there in Princeton, New Jersey. But I got the opportunity to come back and do digital meteorology in my hometown of Richmond, Virginia a couple of years ago. And it was something new, something different. And wanted to have that opportunity to do something different in my hometown. And that's kind of how I got to where we are today. You know, our corporate company, our corporate said, we want you guys to start a podcast because there's four meteorologists. So we're like, okay, we'll start a podcast. So that's what we've been doing, and it's growing like anything else. It seems like everybody has a podcast nowadays. But we've got a little audience, and it's growing, and we're very happy with it. And we're happy to have you, Emily, as well, because, as you know, it's a small business. It is a small business, even though it's nationwide. If you don't know somebody that knows that person.
For sure. And isn't it the beauty of digital meteorology, too, that we're all just kind of sitting at home where we want to live right now, having this collaborative podcast, including Joe, our quote-unquote Jersey boy, as Sean called you. So, Joe, tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in New Jersey. I was raised in New Jersey. I went to school in New Jersey. I worked in New Jersey. I'm here podcasting in New Jersey. So
just to be clear, what state are you in right now?
I think I'm in New Jersey right now.
okay, cool.
You know,
cool.
Interesting. So the last time I saw you, Emily, was at the American Meteorological Society Weather Conference in Baltimore. You know, that was the last time I pumped my own gas. So that's about 2 months ago now we're going on where I haven't touched a gas pump since then. And I'm not really planning on it for a while here. So hoping that was a once in a lifetime kind of thing. But I went to Rutgers, graduated with a degree in meteorology. And actually, I started out in, I'll even take a little step back there. I actually started as a TV reporter for I don't know if we're going to see this, but like this long for a local station here in New Jersey. Didn't really work out. Like it wasn't weather. I was new. I didn't really know a lot about reporting, so it was fine. But ended up working in weather consulting for 4 years in New Jersey. We had clients like the Philadelphia Eagles, MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. NASA was a client. And it really taught me a lot about how to forecast and how to communicate. Because you know, when you have people paying you to do stuff, you really got to be, on your game. I mean, we're on our game now, of course, but when there's real dollars coming at you, you had to learn how to communicate. So, I worked, in forecasting consulting, but also working a lot with our radio stations that we had. I did sales. I was selling our weather products, social media. We had a popular Snapchat at the time. This was when Snapchat was super big. I feel like it's kind of declined over the years, but we had some fun. And then, after 4 years there, I took the job at the Press of Atlantic City here. And I kind of like to say I've worked in a BC era and an AD era of weather. And that came and that changed when Sean and Kirsten and Matt, who's on our weather team, came along for about 4 years. I was pretty much working by myself. I was using PowerPoint to make all of our videos and stuff. Now we have a full team. We're doing the pod. We have an IBM Max graphics system. I'm sure we'll talk about all that. But it's really been cool to be on this kind of leading wave of weather here. And I'll just say real quick, too, we've had a meteorologist since 2014 at the Press of Atlantic City. We had a meteorologist before me. And at the time in 2014, we think, but we can't say with certainty, that we were the first local quote unquote newspaper with a full-time meteorologist on staff. We don't know that for sure, but we think it could be. And that was after the NBC station in Atlantic City shut down and we hired a chief meteorologist. So it's been a really interesting journey here in our corner of New Jersey with weather.
Yeah, it's interesting because I knew both of you separately. I didn't really know until maybe the AMS conference a couple of years ago that you worked together. So you're under this umbrella of a newspaper company, correct?
Yeah, so it's odd because as most of us know, the media business is changing rapidly, dynamically. Some organizations are trying to reinvent themselves. There is massive consolidation within the industry. Everyone who has worked in this industry, whether it's in the classical newspaper, whether it's radio, whether it's television or cable, they've seen it and been impacted by it. So for us, working for what I would say is a traditional newspaper organization, our company is called Lee Enterprises, and it owns about 70 properties across the country. 10 in my home state of Virginia, and we're kind of headquartered, the Virginia branch, if you will, is in Richmond. But we have several hubs across the country where we're doing work. But Richmond is one of them, which is why I'm here to help with our statewide focus in Virginia. But what we've kind of been brought in to do in addition to what Joe has been doing, there are two other meteorologists across our company to not just write, but increasingly do video forecast for these properties. So the four of us kind of split up the country and we do forecast videos where the weather is most impactful, you know, high impact weather. The idea for us is we need to be there when the weather is not always volatile, but when it is changing the most rapidly. You know, the weather apps, love them or hate them, have come a long way and they're not bad, but they do not do well in rapidly changing weather situations. So that's where we come in. We're not going to do a forecast for every single of these 70 properties every day, but we do have the resources now to step in when the weather is volatile or rapidly changing, and as they say, value add to what is already out there. So that's kind of what we've been brought in to do. And we've been going with this strategy for about 12 or 18 months now.
It's interesting because I think there was a time where perhaps newspapers were thought of as becoming irrelevant in this industry. And now I feel like you guys are more relevant and, you know, people are able to access your information more easily than maybe a local TV station. It's right there whenever they need it, wherever they are, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. So when I left my consulting job at WeatherWorks, I remember someone specifically asking me, like, you know, well, aren't you afraid that like the company's not going to exist anymore? And I still remember that. And I was like, no, I'm pretty confident. And I think that just holds true to what we've known in television for decades, which is weather sells. People tune into the television news for weather. So why don't we have it here? And, you know, we'll say newspaper. I keep using quotes. You know, we're still trying to figure out a word. I think digital daily might be the way for it. But, you know, going back decades, traditionally the weather stories were covered by like the cub reporter or the reporter that the editor didn't really like or something like that. It was just kind of like, go ahead and do this weather story. But people see the value, you know, at the leadership level of what we're doing and that people come to see it. And to Sean's point, you know, we're doing a lot of these videos. But the amount of, if you compare it to television news, what I think is nice is that, you know, you're saving all the time you're doing by, you know, let's say you're doing 15 hits in a morning or an afternoon show, right? You know, you're saving all that time and those hours, you're rolling it into one video, and then you can put out a piece of content about, you know, something else or go into another market and talk about those areas. You know, there's a lot of great things about, you know, working in traditional broadcast, and there's a lot of great things about working here in this platform as well. And, you know, Emily, I mean, what you're doing now with Sinclair is kind of what a lot of these television stations are doing now too, right? Where you're having people who are focusing only on the digital, which is exactly where you're fitting in and working on this, on the Off the Radar podcast too.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, you guys introduce yourselves. I don't know that I've ever introduced myself to my listeners on Off the Radar. I just kind of jump in and tell them about the way smarter expert that I'm about to interview. So, but my background is broadcast meteorology, like Sean's is and like Joe's. And I spent 15 years doing that in local TV and national too. And then decided I was turning 40. I'm retiring from TV. I'm not doing this anymore. It was enough of a wear and tear on my lifestyle and my family. And so I just wanted to stop waking up at 2 a.m., decided I'm going to change over and figure something else out. And lo and behold, a year later, this enterprise with Sinclair popped up where they decided we're going to start just like a weather enterprise. It's going to be the National Weather Desk. We're going to have a team of six that works on just gathering weather information. And we don't forecast at all. That's not our thing. We focus on the love of weather, the how, the why, the, ooh, that's super cool. So that's the goal is, you know, cool video, cool explainers, making people love weather, making people love science. So we pull a lot of station scientist type content in as well, which I really enjoy. And then like you know, bosses came to me and said, we want to start a podcast. And I said, yes, I'm on it. I'll do it. So it was great because I had wanted to start a podcast for many years and they really gave me the backing and the tools to do it. So I went from, you know, my skill set being just on TV and forecasting to now I edit. Now I am, you know, good with audio equipment. Now I can do social media content and I kind of know how to work TikTok. Still a work in progress there. But I'll never figure that one out totally. But it's so much fun and it's It's like scratching a creative itch that I never, ever knew I had, but it's very, very fulfilling. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm given the freedom every day to just kind of come up with what I want content wise and delivery wise.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of the draw there, is that you do get a little more, actually a lot more creative freedom than you might have gotten as a television or broadcast meteorologist. Every shop is different, of course. But the other thing, and you alluded to this, Emily, is the hours are pretty good. When you do meteorology, it is exceedingly difficult to have a quasi-regular, you know, 8:30 to 5:30, 9 to 6, 7 to 4 kind of job. You know, prime time for weather is still early, early morning. People wake up, get the sleepers out of their eyes. What's it like out there? What do I have to be ready for? So, you know, a lot of meteorologists are up at, as you were, and as I was for a long time, 2:30 in the morning to be ready to do, you know, 2 or 3 hours on television. And then conversely, some people don't get home until midnight or 11 p.m. in the central time zone. So there is value in that. As I'm getting older as well, there's unquestionably value in that. So not necessarily, and it's not that we don't jump in on off hours when the weather is bad, but because we are serving a national audiences regionally, we're not going to be able to jump in and do coverage for an event that lasts an hour. We're generally not going to jump in unless it's a cataclysm in a particular large city. We're probably not going to be live streaming an event. But what we want to do is be there to answer those questions that people are having that they're not getting answered somewhere else.
I'm curious too, what you guys consider, because today we're talking all about digital meteorology and this transition from broadcast meteorology to digital meteorology. So I think I've always kind of been curious what everyone considers digital meteorology, because I think what all we're doing is, but so many things at this point now fall under that umbrella, right?
I think we're like almost at this point where digital and broadcast meteorology and news in general is just kind of all in one. I mean, you know, I love news. I love reading it. I love watching it, but I'm doing it through digital mediums most of the time. I'm on YouTube. Shout out to my YouTube premium subscription. It's a lifesaver. I love it. Well worth my $25 a month. But anyway, you know, but I'm watching stuff from organizations like, you know, CBS or ABC or Wall Street Journal. I'm just watching it on YouTube or I'm reading it online. So I think we're kind of at this point now where everything's, you know, almost the same. I think there's still a difference, but, you know, digital meteorology, to get to your question directly, I think digital meteorology to me is pretty much any content that's made natively for online use. So that can mean social media, that can mean, you know, a Substack, that can mean a news website, it can mean a news YouTube channel, whatever. You know, the challenges with that is like anything on the internet. What's right? What's wrong? Who's legit? Who's not? And that's something that, you know, we just have to consistently combat. And in addition to sometimes fighting with the weather apps that are out there too. You know, I say something, I might get a response. Well, my weather app said this. Well, I'm not your weather app. So who do you trust, the weather app or me? I mean, sometimes I've said that, you know, like, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'm just trying to verify, you know, to Sean's point. And I've learned a lot from Sean. I should start from the beginning. I'm so happy Sean's here. When he joined us 2 years ago, I was like, yes. I said, this is great. This is just what we needed. But, you know, one thing Sean is correct about is that, yes, most of the time your weather app will be okay for what you need. We know that. We get that. I think we're beyond the point of trying to fight that. But what can you provide value added? Think about calling that 800 number and you just want to talk to the representative, but you keep getting the keypad of hell. It's like, you know, press 2, press 3, press 4. You know, you just want to talk to somebody. You just keep hitting 0. You know, there's still a need for that in weather. There's still a need for that in a lot of things in life. And I think we're always going to continue to be relevant. But I'm interested to see what you think about that, Emily.
But okay, so have you guys heard of this weather app called What the Forecast?
No.
I hadn't either. So my husband the other day was like, you know, when I tell people you're a meteorologist, their number one question is, and I was thinking a million different things. He said, has she ever heard of this app called WTF?
Is this a South Carolina thing?
No, it is not. It is very national. I don't think any meteorologists are involved in this app, but it comes up with an algorithm and basically throws cuss words into a forecast. So you can ask this app, you know, what's the forecast at my location? And it will, you know, very crudely respond with whatever forecast is, usually, you know, relatively accurately because they're pulling from somewhere, you know, they're pulling the forecast from somewhere. But their whole thing is that, you know, it's like it's bleeping raining.
Well, it's funny you bring that up.
Are you looking it up right now, Sean?
Yeah.
I know you are.
No, I'm not. That's more Joe's thing. But to your point, a number of years ago, I was still on TV at the time, and you're trying to get people to pay attention to warnings when they come out, the tornado warning, the severe thunderstorm warning. And I remember posting this online. I said, you know, I think every severe weather warning should be spoken by Samuel L. Jackson in just that special way that he does. And let's just leave it, because I love all of his work, but he has a reputation for certain things, fair or not.
Well, it's cool, though, because it's a good reminder that people also want to be entertained. And they want a little bit of lightheartedness when it comes to all of this stuff, too. And it's nice for me, you were talking about watches and warnings, to not have to deal with that anymore. Like, it's taken this pressure off of me to constantly have to be on when it comes to getting warning information out or heading into the station and going wall to wall for hurricane coverage. Because I can think about the deeper story instead. I can think, well, you know, I could do like a climate story about warmer ocean temperatures, or I can talk about, you know, let's pull up this educational YouTube video we did last year that shows the difference between a watch and a warning. So I can think about this other content that's going to help educate our viewers and our listeners rather than just having to go, okay, well, there's, you know, the warning is until 5:55, you know, the monotony of having to deal with staying on with those warnings. Once you get rid of that, I can actually remind people of, you know, information that they need to know, that background information, educational information. And then it makes me really appreciate weather again, too.
You know, I think we're all pretty well positioned for the future, especially with warning communication. I mean, that's another thing with apps, right? You're usually, everybody's going to get that tornado warning or a severe thunderstorm warning on their phones. But we, you know, this is a bigger topic, but we still, you know, people that we need to do a better job of educating what is a warning and what's a watch. Is a watch, you know, that's the age old thing that I think the National Weather Service is doing some things that will help to address that. But it still comes down to communication and understanding these things. So
stay tuned to the AMS broadcast conference in June for more information.
That's right.
Yeah. But going back to the videos that we're able to do, let's say some area of the country is under the threat of severe weather. You know, you're up in the morning. We call slight risk, moderate risk, but you know there's some area of the country that is likely going to get some severe thunderstorms or tornadoes later in the day. You know, we could put out a video and go, this is what you should do if it happens. You know, we could remind people first thing in the morning, plan now in case it happens. If you get a warning, if your phone goes off, this is what you should do, because that's how most people are going to be getting the information now. So trying to think about how individuals get weather information now, how they sometimes are surprised, try to reach them where they are. And back to the point that Joe was making about digital versus broadcast, this is also very generational, right? I mean, each one of us is probably about 10 years apart, and each one of us consumes media a little bit different. I mean, my mom's a boomer, and she kind of misses the newspaper, but we still get a lot of folks who are, you know, 70 and older who still get the paper and they want to see it in the paper. And, you know, I've got kids in their early 20s that are like, whatever, Dad, it needs to be on TikTok. Well, worse, they're not even on those anymore. They've gone straight to Discord. They're gone to Reddit. They're on Twitch.
I think you blew everybody's mind there.
I don't even know what these are. I've never
seen. Exactly.
I've heard of Reddit.
So there are so many places to get information, and you have to decide where your time is best spent, in which application, which video. Is it text? Is it audio only? It's all over the place. And that's where the challenge is meeting people where they are and try and decide where your time is best spent to reach certain audiences. That is a huge, huge challenge.
Yeah, and then enter the AMS, the American Meteorological Society, a few years back. Erica Groce brought up this idea of we need to address this before it gets ahead of us, is there's this need for this distinction for the public to know who is a reputable source for digital content, for digital meteorology. And I think actually, Joe, you were like a big reason for this because I was on the broadcast board at the time and we were getting your tapes and they didn't really fit the mold for the CBM, the Certified Broadcast Meteorologist seal. But you were so good and you were doing what you needed to be doing, but it was in this different format. I think it kind of, you know, made people think, well, there's this need for something else here. It didn't fit the radio situation. It didn't fit the broadcast situation. It was this whole digital realm. So Erica came up with this idea of the CDM, the Certified Digital Meteorologist seal. And all three of us, I believe, were on the ad hoc committee. Some took a bigger role, Joe, in organizing this seal. It's now active. It is an active seal. There's a number of people that already have it. Joe was the first to get this CDM seal. So congratulations, Joe, on your CDM.
It was job well done by everybody.
And I think Sean and I are somewhere in the process right now on gathering material.
Yeah. In the queue.
Yes, we're in the queue. So yeah, you know, I think this is really good. And I think it'll be interesting to see also how many broadcast meteorologists decide to get the CDM seal, like myself, like Sean, who had the CBM. We already took the test, which I feel like is the hard part. It's this exam, a meteorology exam, and you have to pass. And then you have to submit these works that demonstrate that you are a reputable source for digital weather material. So it's such a broad community that it's, you know, Joe, you certainly had a hard time, a big job to do there when it came to these submissions and what's accepted and the rubric. But I think it's in a good place and I'm excited to see this in the future and if it kind of explodes the way that the CBM did, you know?
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for. And, you know, I think just taking a step back, right? You know, what are these seals? I mean, they're professional certifications. Think about everybody, you know, you guys listening out there, you guys probably have a professional certification in your field or you did at some point in time. It's the same thing. You know, you want a licensed plumber to come over your house and work. Well, you want a, you know, certified digital or broadcast meteorologist to tell you what's going on. You know, we have a committee, right? That we're working on, you know, perfecting this process. It's an exam and then submission of your work. You know, we have at the time of recording, I think we have a couple dozen people who have applied, but this is only going to expand. And what we really wanted to do is it's not just for people like Sean and I who, you know, and even you, Emily, who are working for a news organization. It's for people who are doing this on their own, who have their own consulting or media business, who also want to show people that this is, you know, legit. Steve DiMartino from NJNYPA Weather just, he earned his not too long ago. He has been like waiting for a long time because he couldn't get the CBM, not because he's not good, but because it just wasn't relevant for his work, but he's still forward facing with the public. He was so happy when he got it. He has a whole 11-minute video on how much it meant to him to get this. So that, you know, that was really cool to see. I think we're all cognizant that we live in an era where we're challenging the status quo. And we're hoping that with the seal, we can say that these are the people that you want to turn to out there and that are, you know, backed by this organization that's the largest in the United States for weather and really the largest in North America. Yeah, I'm so happy to be, you know, number one. It was a surprise and a great honor at the same time. And like I said, I'm trying to follow in Sean's footsteps, who was a chair of the broadcast board back in the day, and Emily, who just came off of that. And, you know, we're working with our own digital board to work on things like awards for PEEP for Excellence in Digital Meteorology and other events that we could do throughout the year.
Cool. Sean, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Just to Joe's point is that everything continues to evolve. And sometimes I don't even like the word evolve because that implies that it's changing slowly over time. And it's not. It's changing dramatically over time. When I started on the air in the mid-90s, I could not have imagined we would be at this place that we are 30 years later. And who knows where it's going to go from here. I think one of the big questions we're all going to find out in the next 5 to 10 years is how much artificial intelligence is going to change this game entirely in terms of the quality of the forecast, in addition to how it is communicated to the public. Going back to that WTF app. I mean, anybody who can write code and with enough gumption, if you will, to use an old folks word, can write an app, pull in the data, and present it however they want. But this is also why we kind of want the seal, so people have some inkling. There is a little bit of professionalism behind this person or that person. I'm often asked, well, what app do you use, Sean? And I said, well, you know, actually, I don't use weather apps that much because I want to get into the core data first. I said, I do have a couple of apps on my phone. I have the one that every meteorologist has. Sing along if you know the words.
Radar scope.
Every meteorologist has radar scope. But I also have WeatherBug just to get the warnings when they come out. And not just the high impact warnings, but you know, the river flood warning, the red flag warnings, the fog advisories. That's why I get that. Not necessarily for the day-to-day forecast. It's more like, oh, the weather service decided to pull the trigger and put out the red flag warning yesterday. Got it.
Yeah. And we talked about how the CDM is a good indicator of this is a reputable source. So I'm curious if you guys have an opinion or can offer folks advice on what might not be a reputable source and any red flags they should look for when they are seeing information on Facebook or on TikTok.
If it looks like too scary, like the thumbnail or the headline, it's probably not from a reputable source. That's a scare tactic to draw an emotion from you to click. That's always a good one. It's always good to do your homework on who these people are. See if they have a meteorology degree or not. If they don't, not the same as if you have someone who has a meteorology degree. And here's the thing. If they don't have a meteorology degree, they can't earn one of these seals either. Now, popularity and reputation are two different things. And that's only been more exaggerated in the past, you know, 10, but probably 20 years with the internet. You know, there's a lot of popular people out there who, you know, don't have the credentials. There's a lot of popular people out there who do have the credentials. So I would say those are the two things to look for. But I'm curious to see what Sean has to say about this.
Yeah, man, I could talk about this with a pint of beer or two or three pints of beer all night. So let me try to distill it. Know who your source is. I mean, know who your source is. And as Joe said, check who they are. I mean, a lot of people will tell you just what you want to hear to get the clicks. I would also suggest always going to a second or third source to corroborate something you hear. Always. There are some weather hobbyists that do very good work. And I appreciate them. And some of them kind of make me check on a couple of things. But not every weather hobbyist is the same. And to be fair, there are some people who have degrees, or maybe they didn't quite finish their degree, and they're out there making noise. And this is why we have the seal, so you can do a peer review. This is what your colleagues think of your work, and if they're going to say, yeah, you're good enough to be doing this. I mean, that's the whole point, is peer review. Do you have the respect of your peers doing weather communications, whether it's audio, visual, or print? I mean, that's the point. So I think the CDM is one of the ways we can put something out there to go, hey, if you got a question, these people have got the respect of their peers.
I think another red flag, too, is these extremely long-term forecasts that are precise. So anytime you see, you know, a hurricane forecast 10 days out saying this is where landfall is going to be, or anytime you see snowfall totals that are 10 days out or even a week out, you know, that's certainly a red flag, because that has been a trend too. If people find these websites where they can buy long-term computer models, they think this is it. This is, I've got the answers. I can see the future. And they post that irresponsibly without context. And so that's something to look out for. If you're seeing a forecast that's, you know, 2 weeks out and seems too good to be true to get a forecast like that, it probably is.
Yeah, there are people who think that we're always hiding something.
Right.
And we're not. There are limits of what we can do with skill, right? We could say something's going to happen 14, 16 days from now, but how skillful is it? Is there any real value in that? It's what Joe and I do with these longer term discussions. We're like, there's a signal here. There's a signal here. Pay attention to this time frame. We think there's something brewing. Not it's going to snow 18 inches between 9 and 10 o'clock 14 days from now. And there is there's sometimes a difference there that not everybody gets initially. So this is one of the things that I hope what we are doing, especially as the science does get stronger, we can improve that and then provide some legitimate value into what people should expect of their atmosphere over the next 10, 14, 18 days.
Yeah, and I think any good communicator, anybody that studies weather communication at all, will always stress the importance of conveying uncertainty. You know, this is what we know, and this is what we also don't know, and this is what could change, and this is what we're a little unsure of. So that's always important. I think just, you know, our business has changed so much between communication and digital. I'm excited about the future. I think we're all in a really good spot, and I think, you know, it's one of those get on board or you're going to become irrelevant type of situations too. You know, all of these broadcast meteorologists that say, I don't want to do digital. I don't feel like posting on social. This is where it is. This is what we're doing now. And it's going to be the only thing at some point, or a hybrid of the two, as you were saying.
Yeah. And, you know, I think too, like, Leo, I'll speak for myself, I guess, but, you know, like, TV's cool. Like, it's cool. You got the studio, you got the cameras, the big lights. You're like, it's definitely a cool thing to be a part of, right? I mean, you know, I mean, but you don't have the comfort of sitting in your own house at the webcam. You know, it's two different things. So, you know, television's so cool. And I think I do think there's a number of our colleagues out there who are doing great work in broadcasting. And, you know, we're on these front lines of the next wave. And, you know, who knows, 30 years from now, you know, we might be the, you know, old people who are like, oh, I don't know if I want to change to this. And, yeah, you know, there's something else going on.
We're talking big game now.
You know, I mean, who knows, right? I mean, I just, you know, I even think about like TikTok, you know, specifically, you know, like I'm kind of on there, but I'm not like on there natively. Like I'm not making native TikToks. It's more just me uploading videos that I'm doing elsewhere and I'm putting them on there. What I will say though, you know, what makes, well, at least on our weather team side, like job so much easier in terms of getting content out on social that will draw us back to the website, is Social News Desk. Love that website. I use it all the time. I pretty much live on it. You can add all of your social profiles to it. Now I have my Facebook, X, Threads, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube all on there. And you can send it out so you can be in all these places at the same time. And you can just change the typing, you know, how much word you want to match the style. You know, obviously Twitter, X, whatever, you know, is 280 characters. Facebook can go as long as you want. So you can kind of fool around with it. So there's tools out there to make yourself and amplify your voice, you know, multiple times over.
Yeah, we use Sprout. It sounds very similar, but it's same sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
That brings up a good question. Favorite digital tool for the job that you do? Sounds like Joe, you might have yours decided.
Well, you know, are we counting our Mac system that we have from the weather company? We're doing that. I got my Mac now. I don't know who's going to listen to podcasts. If you're a meteorologist, you'll appreciate this. I have my Mac system right here next to me, down right below my laptop. It's in my house. If you're not a meteorologist, that's a very unusual thing to have. But we're probably going to see more of this in the digital world. But excluding that, yeah, Social News Desk is my favorite.
Sean?
It's changing because the algorithms are changing. You know, Facebook used to be where you could reach a lot of people in a hurry, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago almost. But now the algorithms are such that news and weather-related content are de-emphasized in their algorithm, right? And then Twitter got bought by some dude I think we've heard of, and that algorithm has changed. You know, I theoretically, yeah, have 6,000 followers, but I looked through and my content was seen by a couple of hundred people. So how much should I spend my time there? Then I go back to TikTok, but then I'll post something on TikTok. It blows up for 6 hours and then disappears. I mean, it doesn't get many more views. I have not done a lot on YouTube because I also want people to go back to our company's website for the videos. Threads, I'm just not sure about Threads. I have thought about doing a little bit more, starting a Discord server to reach another audience. So I don't know. I mean, Blue Sky has started. I rather like Blue Sky because it reminds me of old Twitter, but that really hasn't reached critical mass yet. So I don't think there is one answer yet. I think Joe's point is probably best here. Social news desk is throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks the most, because the rules are always changing. And I think that's the frustration from trying to get your message out, is I want to get a message out to a lot of people who claim to want to follow me and are interested, but they don't get it because ownership of these algorithms is such that it's hard to get your content in front of the people.
It is. And so I've kind of given up on figuring out what the best one is. Instead, I get excited about the content creation. So Riverside, I know I've heard you guys.
Yeah.
I've talked your ear off about Riverside, but yeah, that's my favorite tool right now. Riverside and Adobe, because Adobe has such amazing tools as well. You know, we use it to edit the podcast. We use it for AI capabilities, even editing. They have Adobe Express now as, you know, a web-based program where you can do all of that. But yeah, I love Riverside, you know, for recording, for editing, for easily grabbing quotes, for transitioning stuff to social media. It's a lot of fun. And I enjoy the whole content creation process more so than the throwing stuff at walls and seeing what sticks.
Yeah, it does give you a chance to expand your horizons, expand your skill set, you know, do text, do video, do audio, do editing, do shoot your own video, all these things that you probably didn't do 15 years ago. So it's nice to increase your skill set and frankly, make yourself more valuable in the media ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but 15 years ago, I was in a union that did not allow me to touch cameras, that did not allow me to do anything than basically what I was doing on TV, talking and doing weather. So it held me back from learning some of these skills that I now have in my second career, I guess. But is there anything else you guys want to talk about when it comes to digital meteorology before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I just two things. So, you know, we talked a lot about social, Sean and I, but, you know, our goal, and I'm sure same for you, Emily, is to get people back to our websites because that's where our content is hosted. That's where, you know, we get paid from. You know, we have subscribers there who are looking for our content. So, you know, we use social as, you know, the front porch to get people into our website and subscribe. We've seen subscribers come because of our weather content. I think the second thing too, I just want to, you know, the future of this, and we did touch on this, but, you know, we've seen a very small, but growing number of people who are doing this on their own with their own studio, you know, who have left broadcast or even left digital, you know, have done this at their own. You know, I remember when I started at the press, I said, well, look, I said, you know, we don't have hundreds of $1,000 studio, but we spent a couple $1,000s on making a studio and it looks pretty good. Well, now it's at the point, and, you know, obviously the COVID pandemic shifted this, but now it's like, well, I could just do this at home in a home studio and, you know, spend a couple thousand or maybe $10,000 to $20,000 in doing it. And people are generating revenue through advertisers, paid newsletters, you know, and doing it. We do some of this me professionally, are doing this. You know, we have local businesses who advertise with me to get their name on a Facebook post. Our podcast is sponsored as well for a couple of months. So the future is just kind of, it's just exciting. And I just want to go back to, I think all three of us, you know, not to toot our own horn, but I think we're on this wave. We'll see where the wave goes, but we're on the wave for now and things are looking pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's the most exciting part is we don't know exactly how this wave is going to continue or how it's going to break. The rules always seem to be changing. So it challenges you to keep your eyes open, understand how communications and media continue to change, and be ready for what is out there, because there's still a lot that is unknown.
Anything exciting coming up on Across the Sky that we should be listening for?
Well, you know, we'll be going into summer soon. So, you know, we're talking, you know, we'll be talking about beach safety and things like that. I'm actually going to pull up our schedule. We actually have a podcast planner that we have, you know, going months out.
So much more prepared than I am.
Well, you know, Adeline, we said this before, you know, you're one person. You're a one woman show. We are a four person operation here. So, you know, you definitely have more on your plate than we do. But I'm taking a look at our schedule. I just got to wait for my Google Sheets to slide down. We have coming up sub-seasonal forecasting and a summer outlook. And then we're going to be talking more about hurricane season, beach safety. We try to keep it seasonal, you know, but that's what we have going on. How about cool. you, Emily? What's going on off the radar? And when are you making these Across the Sky t-shirts for us? Because I know you have your off the radar t-shirt.
Those turned out to be way more popular than I had any idea they would be. It was a funny surprise because my husband decided to just have them made, you know, through a t-shirt service and gave them to our entire family. By entire, I mean like his family, my family, extended family for Christmas. And they're so soft and they're so cute. But now I'm getting people who have seen them on social media emailing me or texting me and saying, where can I buy that shirt? So they're not real. They were, you know, just done. Like they were not done through Sinclair, I should say. But as far as off the radar, I like to go week to week when it comes to planning the podcast. But I have a lot of ideas. And like you guys, I try to stay very kind of topical to what's going on. You know, we had tornado special that came out. We'll certainly have one for hurricane season. Sports, you know, we've got all the sporting stuff coming out. Golf. And then, of course, as we get into the fall, we'll start talking about fall colors. So, yeah, I just want to stay relevant week to week. I love to hear ideas from all the listeners as well. So if you have any ideas for podcasts or something you want to hear about, I'd love to hear it. I like to do a lot on space, too, just because that's so relevant right now.
Emily, we're going to put you on the spot here. So we do a little podcast bit at the end of our podcast called Across My Sky, where we talk about one thing that's happening in our region of the country. That's just unique to the region of the country. So I'm wondering, is there something going on in South Carolina? Now, you and Sean are pretty close to each other in Virginia, I should say. This works out better with our pod. But what's going down in South Carolina that someone in New Jersey might not appreciate?
Something that's ongoing here, and I'm in South Carolina, but I'm in Charleston, South Carolina, the Low Country. So the ongoing problem here always is sunny day flooding. So coastal flooding, high tide flooding when it's not even raining, and when it does rain, even worse. But I think that's always interesting to people who come here on vacation, and it will have not rained the entire weekend that they're here, but will be in a elevated tide situation where it's full moon or a new moon and they're driving down the street and all of a sudden there's road closures, because in Charleston they just keep the barriers on the side of the road, and we know the roads that are going to close during, you know, an elevated high tide. So that's something that's ongoing here. And certainly something that's always happening in the spring and in the fall. So something to watch out for if you're ever along the coastline here in Charleston or in South Carolina at all.
That was a good weather one, you know.
Do you sometimes not talk about weather?
We try to keep it not about weather.
That was an option.
To be honest with you, you know, but that's fine. Coastal flooding is a big deal here at the Jersey Shore too. So
yeah,
you know, it's Sean, you want to go?
Yeah, we end up talking a lot about sports at the end of the Across My Sky stuff. Our local minor league soccer team has their home opener this week. So the weather should be pretty good for that. Actually, tonight when we're recording this, baseball season, we've got a minor league baseball team that's going to be starting in a couple more weeks. So just spraying pollen, these kinds of things going on heavy right now here in Central Virginia. before the big heat of summer comes. And you're in South Carolina, so you know what big summer heat and humidity are like there.
We flee the area. Everybody from here just flees every summer, go somewhere more comfortable.
In New Jersey, like Memorial Day weekend is like a huge thing. And it's a huge thing in like most of the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic. But, you know, I remember talking to my friend who lived in California. He's like, Memorial Day just means like nothing like out in Los Angeles area. Like it's just a holiday. And it got me thinking like, you know, I don't know. Like is Memorial Day weekend a big deal in South Carolina, Emily?
I consider, well, yes, because it's my birthday, but also, I always think of it as like the unofficial start of summer. So yeah, that's when all the pools open. It's when people really start going to the beach around here. And then things kind of shut down Labor Day. So Memorial Day to Labor Day, and I feel like things really peak around 4th of July.
All right, here's my question for you, Emily. Where people in Charleston, where do people go to the beach? Because, you know, Charleston, I don't think of as being a beach city, right?
So the peninsula, there's no beach on the peninsula. That's downtown. But there's beaches all around. So if you were to go north, you would go to Lake Sullivan's Island, Isle of Palms. But you really do have to drive like through Mount Pleasant. You have to go over the Ravenel Bridge to get there. The closest beach, I think, to downtown is probably Folly Beach, a.k.a. the Edge of America. So you would go James Island, which the Edge of America.
The Edge of America?
Yeah. So, and then the best beach in the Charleston area is Kiowa Island. So that is my go-to for beaches. It's, in my opinion, above and beyond the best beach. But once again, like probably 40, 45 minutes from downtown.
Got it.
You said it was Kiowa Island. I think I see like 5 golf courses on this island.
Yeah.
I'm on Google Maps.
Yeah, like you know, everywhere. Joe, I know you're a runner. They have a half marathon and a marathon every December, so...
Guess I'm going to have to come down to Kiowa Island.
Yep.
And check it out.
It's very flat.
I'm sure it is. No, yeah, not a lot of hills at the beach. Not a lot of hills at the beach, right?
No.
Well, I think this was a good episode. I think we did well. But we'll see what the listeners think. Ultimately, you, the listeners, are going to tell us how well we
did. Yes, they will, for sure.
And we ask everybody to follow both of the podcasts everywhere, right?
Totally.
You guys are on all of the platforms. So all the platforms.
Rate and review us on the Apple, on the Spotify, on all of those places you get your podcasts. Of course, you know, Google has got rid of Google Podcasts, or about to, and they're going all YouTube. What we said before, you've got to keep track of how all this is changing.
Yeah.
I got very used to Google Podcasts, and they're like, yeah, you know what? We're just going to put it on YouTube now. I'm like, thanks. Now I got to make changes to settings and all of that stuff. So. Just got to stay.
Because you're one of those non-Apple people.
I have been invested in Android for a very
Neither
long time. There's
Android
no going
Lite.
Back.
What?
There's no going back now.
Listen, Apple, if you like simple, you like Apple.
I do like simple, Joe. Don't give me a hard time about it.
It's okay. I have these arguments often.
I figured. All right, guys. Thank you.
Joe, it is always fun to talk shop with other meteorologists, especially when we're doing things that are a little bit different. You know, we've talked a lot about our colleagues in the National Weather Service, our colleagues who are in broadcast meteorology. We've talked to people who are doing basic fundamental research at the academic level, people who are doing energy forecasting, commodities forecasting. So this is really new ground, and I don't want to say we're making it up as we go, because that's not entirely true, but we are trying some things that we haven't been able to do, and it's kind of fun. It looks like she's got the same thing going on there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, meteorology in general is already a small field. You whittle that down to media meteorology, that's even smaller, and then you get to digital meteorology, solely digital meteorology, and I think we could all fit at one long table at an Arby's or a Red Robin or something like that.
I thought you wanted to go to Popeye's. That's where you want to go,
right? Oh, you're right. That was a good point. That was a failure on my part, Sean. You're absolutely correct. We need to go to Popeye's.
One more thing, though. I literally was driving around this week here in the western suburbs of Richmond, and I saw a sign go up on one of the little plazas here, coming soon, Shake Shack.
Shake Shack. Well, I'll tell you what, Sean, I've actually never been to Shake Shack.
How is that even possible, man?
And, you know, I don't know. I mean, it is around, you know, being in the New York City metropolitan area, it is around. I guess I don't really eat like that kind of food. I don't know.
Burgers?
That's not even true.
You don't eat hamburgers like ever?
I don't eat a lot of red meat, to be honest with you.
All right. That's fine.
And my wife, who's also a meteorologist, she does not eat, she doesn't really eat much meat either. So I guess, like, you know, we Popeyes, of course, Royal Farms, the goat of chicken. Shake Shack, I haven't been to, Sean. So I apologize for disappointing you and maybe our podcast listeners that I haven't been to Shake Shack.
No, I just like talking about all these things from the Northeast that keep working their way south.
I mean, Wawa's the classic example.
By the way, I was in the Outer Banks over the weekend. There's a Wawa about to open, I think, in Kill Devil Hills on the Outer Banks. We were driving by, the signage was up, the pumps were up, and it was just, you could tell they just needed to deliver product. They're going to have that thing probably open by Memorial Day. So it just keeps it coming, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Wawa is such a classic part of Jersey Shore, man. I mean, you go in, you know, you get a sandwich, you get the hoagies, the subs, whatever you want to call them. We call them hoagies in Wawa land. You know, you get your drink and you're rolling out. But it's interesting, Sean, that you said gas station because because I think Wawas are so old in New Jersey, especially at the shore. They didn't build them with gas station.
Right.
So when you go down to, like, it's weird to have a beach town Wawa with a gas station. It just seems so big to me. If you're from Jersey, Jersey Shore, you'd understand what I mean. Like, you're thinking of Wawa at the shore as this little quaint, you know, still convenience store type thing, but obviously has gotten much, much bigger and, you know, for the better. I'm a fan, but I hope you enjoy that one next time you go to Outer Banks.
I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will. So that's what's across my sky this week. I jumped in and did it right away. Went down to the Outer Banks. Shake Shack is coming. That's what's across my sky. What have you got this week, man?
Well, I think I'm going to have to state the obvious here being in New Jersey. And as we had an earthquake on Friday on April the 5th here, we had our 4.8 magnitude earthquake. It was in the northern part of the state. Now, people might not know, they might know now, that New Jersey has its own fault system, just like California, not as big, but it's the Ramapo fault system. It's a little fault system. It does create earthquakes. But Sean, the last time New Jersey had an earthquake that strong, it was a few weeks removed from signing the Treaty of Paris. That ended the American Revolution. So hopefully we're not, you know, going at war with the British in the next couple of weeks. But that is what is across my sky here. I will stick to a natural sciences topic for this one.
Very, very nice. All right. So what have we got coming up here? And I think next week we've got Bill Weir of CNN Earth Day. He's got a new book out called Life as We Know It, Stories of People, Climate, and Hope in a Changing World. So we're going to talk to him about that. And our buddy Chris Fogaski's coming back, right, Joe?
That's right. He's going to talk more about lightning here. And we have to give a shout out to Joshua Williams from Oklahoma, one of our listeners who asked us about lightning. We said, hey, it's a good time to bring Chris on. And then as we go into May, I mean, we're loaded for the month. We are going to talk about flash droughts that can happen during the summer. So we have Jason Octian. We have Southwest Airlines coming on talking about what it's like being a meteorologist at a commercial airline and flying through the solar eclipse. They did do that as well. And then we have Jan Dutton talking about subseasonal forecasting in the summer outlook. And then we have one more.
Yes. Been in contact with none other than Jen Carfagno at the Weather Channel. We're still working on logistics, but we're hoping to have her on later on the spring or into the summer. So a lot of excitement still ahead in the coming weeks. For Joe Martucci, I'm meteorologist Sean Sublett. For my colleagues Kirsten Lang in Tulsa and Matt Hollander in Chicago, have a great week, and we will talk to you next week on the Across the Sky podcast.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.